Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
This episode is brought to you by Root 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
HRN is offering complimentary business memberships to 50 Black, Indigenous, people of color-owned food businesses this summer. The deadline to apply is July 31st. Each business membership, a $500 value, is an advertising opportunity that will allow businesses disproportionately impacted by COVID-19 to connect with HRN's listening community and promote their work. To apply and review the terms and conditions, go to heritageradionetwork.org/BIZ.
Welcome to Stephanie Skinner, one of the founders of Culture Cheese Magazine and Victory Cheese, and to Molly Brown, education manager for Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. Hello, guys. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having us.
Hello.
Molly, how
good.
Are you?
I'm well. Yes, thank you.
Okay, so we will be discussing Victory Cheese, a group that has come together recently to try to protect American cheesemakers from the pandemic. It includes cheesemakers, mongers, cheese stores, distributors, restaurants, chefs, and cheese guilds. So, hello, Molly and Stephanie. Glad you could join me today. And the first question is, how did Victory Cheese start? Do you want to answer Stephanie first?
Sure. Some months ago, right when COVID started devastating the cheese world, we all saw there were posts about what was happening to cheesemakers not being able to move their cheese, etc. And actually, there was an interesting post from Carlos Yescas, who is at Old Ways, who's actually one of the founding members as well. About the devastation in the soft cheese world over in Europe. And so between that and many other articles, one Sunday night, I got a phone call from Greg O'Neill, who was following this very closely. And we talked about what we might be able to do together. And what we decided was there was obviously there were a lot of interested parties. So we essentially went on the hunt for people like Molly, who was a founding member as well, who could volunteer to think about what we might all do together. And that's essentially what the initial stages were. We were lucky enough to get some very interesting people involved in the beginning, including ACS. And the new executive director, Karen Lundquist, at ACS, and Janet Fletcher. And I reached out and got some funding, which we've been using for various small things, from Vermont Creamery and Bel Joyoso, and most recently from WB Cheese, as well as some individual donations. So we're essentially a volunteer organization. Everything that we spend money on is marketing the Victory Cheese boxes and Victory Cheese, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Molly, what was your experience?
So like Stephanie described, I got a call from Greg O'Neill as well. And he asked me if I would be interested in teaming up with other people in the industry to share information about, you know, the impact that the pandemic was having on the cheese world. Of course, it was really the loss of restaurants, you know, when food service shuttered across the country was really driving, you know, a huge loss of sales industry-wide. So he was bringing people together, you know, from different regions, from different ends of the business to talk about what those impacts were, you know, what that really translated to for cheesemakers. And then, of course, because there is so much altruism in the cheese industry, you know, how could we kind of mobilize to help people who were suffering a loss of business or loss of sales as a result.
So now I heard that there were 35 founding members.
Yeah. There were essentially, this is Stephanie again.
Yes.
I counted them up. These included individuals who, some of whom were just purely, you know, volunteered doing particular projects, like F.M. Munoz, who built our website, and mm-hmm. Will Furtman at Monger, who provided some initial, you know, secured the URL and did all those kinds of things. And then there were people who were cheesemakers, like Matteo Kaler, who of course, you know, is the force of nature in his own right, who drove lots of the conversation. And then Michael Koch from Firefly Farms, and then lots of people like Marty from the Vermont Cheese Guild, and mm-hmm. Beth Falk, retailers. And then we roped in people like Brian Scott and Sean Hockert. And mm-hmm. The list goes on and on. So people have sort of come in and gone out at various times. And I can say the first month and a half or so were very long Zoom calls with all these
people, right,
Monday afternoons, and where we just kicked around what's the scope of the problem. As Molly just mentioned, it did kick off with mm-hmm. With loss of retail. I mean, a loss mm-hmm. of food service, but it moved to retail. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what were the immediate goals at first in those long Zoom meetings as you tried to figure it out?
That is such a good question. I'm not sure that we really had clear goals at that point other than, you know, I mean, the world was so crazy in that moment. Like,
right,
you know, watching the entire pandemic unfold and everybody trying to, like,
freak
keep
out.
Pace with all the many changes and right. emotional impacts, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, sort of all of the anxiety and everything that went in with that. You know I can only really speak for me personally, but, you know, for me, like, the Victory Cheese calls became this, like, really important, like, cornerstone of my life at that moment where I was like, okay, this is... I feel like everything is messed up right now. Mm-hmm. And this is like something that I can do, you know, every week where I can check in with people in my industry
and help,
you know, understand how things are unfolding and start to figure out a way to help. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the process that Stephanie described was so cool to me because it was very organic. You know, I think, you know, it was maybe 15 or 20 people on the very first call. And then from there, it was like, you know, oh, we should include this person. Oh, we should, you know, what about this person? I bet they would have a really interesting perspective or, mm-hmm. you know, something to lend the conversation. And so from there, the group kind of grew, you know, and like Stephanie mentioned, people, you know, came in and came out depending on their availability. But it was this really like cool, organic, grassroots, you know, effort that sort of unfolded, which was really cool to see that come from our industry.
Yeah, I agree. It's been percolating just, you know, right outside my consciousness. Like the victory boxes just all of a sudden took over.
Yeah. I would say that just to echo a little bit what Molly said, and then also talk a little bit how we got to the next step, is that one of the things that I adore about this industry is how basically everybody works together, and mm-hmm. Even, you know, competitors
and always have.
Yeah. And so I had sort of I always, you know, have this little ulterior idea that we can show other industries how to be behave. and one of the things that came out of those initial meetings was a bit of a sort of a creative burst too. I thought we had wonderful design from Rhizome Marketing and Janet Fletcher. There was a big debate about it, but Janet Fletcher came up with a tagline, which we all again coalesced around, which is choose it or lose it.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah. So,
that means choose American cheese or lose it.
Or just, yeah, choose to get, you know, go to the store or buy it online or buy, you know, however, so that you can actually support these people. And it moves down. And we also talked a lot about the fact that, you know, there is, I think, a perception sometimes that artisan cheesemakers are all very wealthy and that they live in some kind of ivory tower world.
Which is far from the truth.
So far from the truth. And you know, the reality is that many of them are farmers, and many of them, you know, spend their first hours in every morning looking at the back end of an animal. I mean, there's nothing really, really, you know,
fancy.
So I feel that it really does span. And if you really want to support rural America, this is one of the ways you can do it, because there may be cheesemakers in cities, but they're getting their milk from someplace else. I mean, there are no cows in Brooklyn, as far as I know.
There's probably one.
There probably is. You're probably right.
And there is Crown Finish.
Yes, and Crown Finish is fabulous. Exactly.
So we do have some cheese coming out of the place.
Absolutely, but again, the point about cheese is that it starts with with animals and people who take care of the animals and the people who, you know, grow the grain and et cetera. And so it really does reach all the way back. It's a very upstream kind of thing just to look at cheese, because it hurts everything all the way down. And so that, again, I feel is we're all part of that industry.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand Jeremy Stevenson was instrumental.
Oh, yeah.
How was he involved?
Yeah. Do you want to take that, Molly, or do you want me to continue blathering until everybody falls asleep?
So Jeremy was part of the, you know, sort of initial group of folks that were tuning into these calls on a weekly basis. So talking about what the impacts to, his business, Springbrook Farm, was, and, just really being, another, you know, voice of a cheesemaker who was really boots on the ground and, experiencing, all of these things kind of firsthand. So he was really pivotal in those initial conversations. He also was a great kind of connector. He made sure that like ACS was brought into the fold, and he made sure that, you know, sort of different people were tagged along the way where he felt that they could best contribute. Mm-hmm. And so he also, you know, I really respected that he seemed.
Yes, I can almost see him. Like, he's tall and he bends down a little and he talks to you. So I can almost see him doing it, you know, helping people connect.
Exactly. And he knew like when to step out. He was like, you know, I think I've contributed what I can here, and I'm going to make room for other voices. And I thought that was really beautifully executed on his part.
Cool.
As well.
Cool.
He seemed to really be able to read the room.
And Andy Hatch. Now, he was hoping to sell 100 and quickly sold 250 cheese boxes?
Yeah, something like that. So when we first came online with the boxes, so this is funny. So when like this whole thing first started, the pandemic first started, you know, and I was like racking my brain and like my, you know, wrenching in my gut, like how am I going to help, you know, my friends sell cheese? And I was like, I'm going to start a neighborhood cheese CSA. I'm going to like sell Wheels of Pleasant Ridge off my front porch to my neighbors and like not even try to make a profit. I just want to like help out my buddy Andy, you know, and quickly realized that that probably wasn't really in the cards for me. I kind of tried to like take the idea like a few other places, you know, and say like, what do you think about this idea? You should start a CSA. And then if you did it, then other people would want to do it. And then the whole world would be doing it all of a sudden, and we'd sell all of this cheese. And I kind of, you know, shared that idea and like, you know, one of the first or second Victory Cheese calls. And I think there were so many ideas churning at that point. Everybody was like, yeah, that's a nice idea. But, you know, there's a lot of other things to discuss still. Mm-hmm. And then a few weeks later, it kind of came back around where Jasper Hill and the Vermont contingent really like stepped up and said, you know, we're going to do this idea of a Victory Cheese box. And, you know, this is what it's going to look like. And I thought like, oh, man, that sounds like kind of what I wanted to do. And so I kind of like inserted myself right into that. And of course, at that point, I called Andy and said, you know, hey, we're working on this initiative. Of course, he had already heard about it from Mateo. So he was fully on board to come online. And he was like, yeah, you know, this is so far outside like my normal business practice, you know, to carry cheeses, bring cheeses into my facility that were made by
other cheesemakers. Right.
I really want to do it. And it's going to be a lot of extra work, but I want to try it. And so, you know, I sent him like 100 stickers. we got a huge sticker donation from Sticker Giant. Thank you, Sticker Giant. And so we were like shipping out, you know, kits of 100 pieces of stickers and info cards for people to use in their boxes. So I sent him off like, you know, one shipment and up to Dodgeville, and he got it. And he called me like a few days later, and he was like, I'm going to need more stickers. And I was like, really? I was like, what's going on up there? And, you know, he had this incredible story, you know, where he thought he would, you know, sell a few here and there and ended up, you know, going gangbusters on it.
Oh, good.
Sold a couple hundred. Yeah. You know, I crunched the numbers, and it was something like, you know, I think he sold his boxes for $75 a box. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was something like $20,000 back to Wisconsin Cheesemakers. So I was feel really good about that.
Really? And didn't you invent the name of the box?
Oh gosh, you know, it's hard to remember, but yeah, I think when I was in my brain about my neighborhood cheese CSA, I thought that's, you know, I would call it Victory Cheese
because
it really resonated with me, just the whole idea of like, you know, it's your patriotic duty to eat cheese right now. help these poor farmers and animals out. You know, I think so many people don't realize that like you can't just turn an animal off, you know,
right,
like a farmer can just stop milking. And
no.
You know, especially here in Wisconsin, you know, we've really seen like the impacts of that system backing up. You know, it was shortly after Victory Cheese, you know, really were, you know, right when we were kind of finding our footing, we were hearing all those stories coming out of Wisconsin and the Northeast about farmers dumping milk for the first time in a generation and just really scary stuff, you know, that you never thought you'd see or hear about.
Wow, that's great.
When you're naming something, you know, you go through all these like torturous, like what should the company be called and all the rest of it. And then when the right one shows up, it's like, that's what it is, of course. So and that is exactly what happened with Victory Cheese. There was no discussion. It was like, yes, that's it. It's done.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Now, how was California involved? Have they become involved?
We had Anthea Stoltz join. She's now on maternity leave, so she had to beep out for a while. But she brought in Cowgirl, and I can't remember who else in California has been involved. But so, but she's gotten her entire cheese guild kind of mobilized around this as well.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah, and Janet Fletcher has been involved from the very beginning. And
right.
Of course, she's a wonderful voice for cheese nationwide, but definitely for California cheese as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the way that the box program, the way we ended up designing the box program is that there are regional coordinators around the country who work with the vendors before they bring their boxes online to make sure that they have their stickers and their info cards, and they've got procurement support, and they have shipping support, and, you know, kind of can help, you know, network people together, you know, connect cheesemakers, all that good stuff. And so we've had some really awesome support in that realm from Sam Chertoff of Case in Point Cheese. So she's been a huge asset to the team, and she's done a lot. Mm-hmm. We have I think there are 7 regional coordinators, and she's certainly the busiest of all of them.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
It's glad to hear. I know half these people. It's like so fun. It's like it must be fun meetings. Well, except that it's a depressing topic.
Well, it is depressing, but always our intention was to create demand, and that's really what's underlying all of this. And so we had a clear and positive message that we didn't want to just quote unquote save a cheesemaker. We wanted to you know, create demand.
Save a lot of
exactly.
cheesemakers.
Exactly. Yeah. And we wanted to focus on action as
right.
opposed
right.
to, you know, just
talk
about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which we
because there's
did
no
plenty
time
about.
For talking. Yeah.
That's right.
This is not time for talking. Okay, so we have to take a break. We'll be right back with Stephanie Skinner and Molly Brown. I'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believe comfort food can be just that. Know where your food comes from. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
So I have a question about the cheese boxes. Is sending individual boxes through the mail instead of through distributors, is it the right kind of help?
That is a great question, and that's definitely something
that,
you know,
was
that
discussed.
We wrestled with.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, we really wanted this to be an industry-wide effort where distributors and retailers and, you know, restaurants, if they were able to, would be able to, you know, sell a Victory cheese box.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we definitely considered that it might be awkward for, you know, a cheesemaker to sell against their customer,
mm-hmm.
you know, or both of their customers, the distributor and the retailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, ultimately from the cheesemakers we talked with, and Stephanie can probably, you know, attest to this as well, that, you know, it just seemed like the imperative was really to, you know, not only, you know, sort of pull the lever on volume, but spread awareness, you know, and that mobilizing the entire supply chain was really the strongest tool we had for the awareness portion of it. So
mm-hmm.
it seemed like everyone that we worked with was kind of gung-ho to just get involved and, you know, not worry so much about those
situations. Right,
mm-hmm.
right. Okay.
And really... I'm sorry, I was just going to just add to that if I can.
Ultimately, yeah,
please do. In the beginning, we knew that, you know, shipping cheese or shipping perishables through the mail is not the most efficient way.
Mm-hmm.
It's cost, you know, it's costly, et cetera. So we had always planned as part of our initiative with Victory Cheese in general to activate some kind of retailer program, because
mm-hmm.
what we had heard over and over again in the early stages is that while everybody was rushing out and buying commodity products and toilet paper, they were not buying they were not going to the specialty cheese counter. And I'm really
mm-hmm.
not sure how much that's even changed as of right now. So people who had fresh cheeses or delicate cheeses in particular, their cheeses were basically sitting in warehouses waiting
mm-hmm.
to be moved, and there was no order for them. And
mm-hmm.
and we've actually heard that actually has continued. Even cheeses that are not as delicate, cheeses like raclette are now basically having to be donated or thrown away, which is even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we had always intended to sort of move this beyond Victory Cheese boxes, but Victory
mm-hmm.
Cheese box was sort of that first, you know, let's all get
yeah.
on it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. That makes sense. Now, did either of you think COVID would last this long?
Yes. Yes.
You did. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, Molly?
I think in my heart, yes. In my mind, I kept thinking like, yeah, we'll do this for a couple weeks and we'll be back to good. And I kind of remember when we were like really starting to invest a lot of energy in the box effort and getting organized and building all the, you know, the programming and the website and the platforms. And I remember thinking like, are we showing up to this party too late? Like, is this even going to still be an issue by the time we really are ready to go full steam on this? And, unfortunately, we were not late to the party.
No, unfortunately, we're not. So what are the plans for the future? Do you want to get better American cheese into supermarkets? Do you want, well, we'd all love for restaurants to reopen, and they are starting to, but not, you know, not fully.
You know, it's really, I mean, part of the problem too is that we have an economy in free fall. And, you know, there's just so many facets to this that it's probably time for us to go get back to the Zooms and do some gut wrench. But I can say that Molly and I have had some conversations with some distributors about activating some kind of Victory Cheese. Not going to be Victory Cheese boxes, but something in store. We're hoping to develop some tests at some regional chains where the, you know, sort of signage or some kind of something will be up for buyers to see what's happening. And that's a great idea. And I think one of the, this is why I feel so strongly about tying cheese to its farm roots, because there's so many people just love the whole concept of baby cows and all the rest of it, and recognizing that that's all in jeopardy. I mean, there are people within our industry who we adore who've had to sell their herds because of this, because as we've all learned, when you dry off a herd, it's not like you can turn them back on again. It's, you know, a year down or more. There's a lot, and that's very expensive for any kind of a cheesemaker to maintain a herd that's not being productive. So we're going to try to, I would like to try to develop more of the awareness of the financial impact up and down the chain. For the consumer, because I think that if people thought about what an industry that does just reach into the roots of Americana, that that really cheese hits all the right notes.
Now, I have an opposite question. Do you think Victory Cheese will outlast COVID?
That's a really interesting question. My hope is that we will be able to, at some point, hand this thing to someone like, you know, sort of an association or something, like an
ACS company,
or whatever.
Right, not
a company. I mean, this is volunteer. Oh. So our intention is not to make money on this. So our intention is to make, so we want this to be something that we've had such great support from ACS. So I feel as if this is, they would be a great place for this to go if this is something, but it may. Victory Cheese Boxes. People are excited about Victory Cheese Boxes.
Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, I did see Andrew Zimmerman and Rick Bayless on Zoom or whatever. Mm-hmm. And who else is in the future? Do you know? Mm-hmm. Do you have any?
Marcus Samuelson. We're working on developing a box with him.
Oh, great.
And, Stephanie Izard. We are also working on developing a box with her.
Now, where's she from?
She's a very well-known chef. She's sort of a young up-and-coming. She's more than up-and-coming. She's in Chicago, and she's quite well-known at this point. And then we've also had, we're working on figuring out how to do a box with, Art Smith, who's Oprah's, chef. And I can't remember who else. This is something that Greg has done a really good job in driving. He's in contact. So Alex Seidel, he's been talking to out of Denver, or Boulder, wherever, someplace in Colorado.
He's in Denver.
Okay. So we have some celebrity folks coming on, and I think that we'll just keep adding those as they sort of materialize.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I definitely think those folks really help us, like, you know, gain momentum and keep momentum. Produce fresh fodder for the internet and all that kind of stuff.
So what is the hardest part of COVID for both of you?
I'm out in the middle of the woods, basically, so I don't know. So we're essentially naturally isolated. So we haven't had a ton of the isolation misery, but I really, I really miss being able to go. I miss the ACE, you know, the conference. I miss being able to see everybody.
I've had to remake
the way I say hello to people. I'm not allowed to hug and kiss anymore. So,
right.
It's tough. Yeah.
It is tough. And what about you, Molly? What's the hardest part for you?
Oh man, I miss restaurants so much. No idea how much my life depended on them. I mean, I did. Restaurants have always, you know, been my favorite place to be and sort of the place I felt like the most at home, even sometimes more than my own home.
Uh-huh.
So I'm really just missing the, you know, the routine and the regularity of normal life.
Right.
I also, I really do miss traveling. When I started with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin in November, I was already sort of doing a lot less travel than I had in my previous life.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sort of on a natural deceleration, but I have to say, I never thought we would get to, almost the end of July of 2020, and I would have been on, you know, one distance trip this whole year. So that's,
yep.
That's been crazy. And, you know, I've got a young kid at home, and it's just hard to, all of my personal stuff aside, it's hard to speculate on how this is affecting her.
Yeah.
Right.
She's not quite three yet, so right. It's hard for her to express herself, but she hasn't played with another kid since March.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah,
oh.
It's a bummer.
Oh, she doesn't understand why.
Mm-hmm. No, but she never asks about it either. And she's very, like, happy and she's thriving. So uh-huh. Part of me is like, that's a mom stress you don't need to carry, you know?
Right.
Like, just keep being sad about restaurants and airplanes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, your kid's fine. we reunited with my parents, like, combined our germ bubbles with them, probably about a month ago. And mm-hmm. So she gets to go over to their house now and
oh, good.
With them.
Good.
And that is the highlight of her life. And, so.
And probably your parents as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's great. Now, what do you think is the biggest problem or the hardest part for the cheese world, the whole cheese world?
Molly, feel free. I mean, I feel like there's so many. I don't know if I could. I mean, certainly losing for smaller makers. Actually, I don't know if this is true for just smaller makers. But mm-hmm. losing their food service is
yeah.
just absolutely horrible. The other mm-hmm. thing that's happened is that there have been people that have had to go, you know, either lay people off or
mm-hmm.
Stop making cheese
yeah.
for
yeah.
either, you know, forever or for a while. Who knows? And mm-hmm. I think there's, you know, talking about individually what everybody's emotional trauma is we can't even project on that, but
right.
in terms of the financial stress, I think that's just absolutely gut wrenching. And
yeah. And how crazy is it not knowing how long this will last?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say is I think, you know, the thing like industry is just the uncertainty of it all.
Yeah.
I feel like, and cheese making are things that like rely on certainty to
right,
be successful.
Right.
You know? And so just sort of all of the unknowns in the situation, I think the way that like shopping behaviors have shifted. I mean, the fact that yes, food service obviously has been the biggest driver of, you know, the loss of business in the specialty cheese world. But
mm-hmm.
when you look kind of beyond that and then you think about how shopping patterns have changed and
mm-hmm.
how, you know, I've talked to cheesemakers who aren't getting the promotions that they rely on annually, you know, with their big retail, you
mm-hmm.
know, key retailers
mm-hmm.
To move the needle, we've talked about why that is. And it's because everybody's doing so much online ordering and,
mm-hmm.
you know, traditional retail promotions really rely on capturing people at the point of sale, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there you see that item on sale and so you grab it and toss it into your cart. You don't.
Mm-hmm.
get that same experience on Instacart or
mm-hmm.
Amazon
right.
Prime Now
right.
or whatever. So, you know, I think that there's also drivers within the retail sector, you know, that are less visible
mm-hmm.
And that are going to have a more long-term impact.
Yes.
On people's annual sales. And yeah, I think just the uncertainty mm-hmm. bit is really hard to wrestle with.
It's also a problematic that there are no ways for this as an industry, the food industry is reliant on shows to debut new products, to gain new customers, et cetera. by putting, you know, we've heard this all of us many times, that if you have a great cheese, the best way to get a sale is to put it in somebody's mouth. And mm-hmm. so when you're basically, there's no sampling at stores. There's no, there's nobody's going to the fancy food show and showing their new cool stuff or, you know, their new packaging or whatever. So how do you get the word out? And that is an industry that I don't know when that one's going to come back. Because not many people are going to jump in planes and come over to the United States to jam into the Javits, right? In hundreds, in the thousands, excuse me. And then
in the near future.
In the near future. One of the great positives in all of this, if I could just end like that thought on a tiny note, is I have heard that there's been a lot of creative explosion with people who have tons of milk. What are they going to do with it? A lot of new cheeses have been created. So I don't know what those where those are yet, but I think that we might be seeing those when and if we do all come out of this, whatever
right
it looks like.
Right,
we may have some really cool stuff to explore.
And hopefully they'll be aged.
That does give me hope.
They might be aged.
Yes, yes, or they're aged. Definitely going to have to age. And they're probably going to be very large format too, I would imagine.
Right. That's a good mm-hmm. point. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, you guys, for joining me today and discussing this depressing and exciting topic of Victory Cheese. And I just want to thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been great.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.